B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Thursday, January 10th, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. Want to thank everyone listening on WWKB 1520 in Buffalo and ESPN 97.7, 100.1, and 1200 AM in Syracuse, New York. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get the latest in the world of gaming and esports. Plus, over the next three episodes, we'll feature interviews from our first national show of 2019, Checkpoint XP's educational special. But we start today talking about the meta. Not so much as it affects pro players, we're talking about how the changing meta affects the casual base, or even if it does affect the casual player base. Joining me to help break down this important discussion is the Checkpoint XP crew, Robbie Landis.
Moving the payload.
Norris Howard.
Thank you kindly.
And Joe Sloan.
Check a look. And yeah, so if you play Overwatch or League of Legends, no doubt you have heard players complain about, oh, the meta's stale, the meta's boring, I'm tired of facing off against this.
I
don't like goats meta, guys.
Whatever it happens to be. And when we were talking about it, you know what the truth of the matter is? You've never faced the meta. I mean, unless you are playing in Diamond or above, you don't play against the meta. Like League of Legends, right? You might face the same champions that the best players are playing, but you're not facing the actual meta strategies.
Because here's the thing, because meta does dictate what characters may have more tools in a specific game.
There's a definite trickle-down effect.
However, players at the lower end, where majority of your player base will be, don't have the mechanical ability in order to execute.
The spatial awareness
in order to execute most of the things that we see at the pro level.
Now, okay, for real quick, because I'm sure that there's going to be a couple of people who are listening and confused, even if they're avid video game players, they're like, the meta, I don't know what you're talking about.
Sure.
So the meta is kind of the shorthand for what we term the meta game, which is the game of how a game is played competitively. Mm-hmm. That's where you get certain tiered character lists,
right?
And you know, the
strategies,
the accepted mainstream strategies that are being used,
the most effective heroes,
those kinds of things.
For those of you coming from traditional sports, as we've seen the NFL shift from a running league to a passing league, we would say the meta has shifted more towards passing.
Exactly. So this is not something that the game developers do control this to a certain extent, but this is really the community, the player base, and the pro players coming together and figuring out what is most effective and most potent to be able to deliver their strategies on the field.
Right.
And so that's where we get kind of this insular thinking around the meta. And it will shift as you see different changes and additions made to games over time. But the meta is something that is more collectively agreed upon than necessarily one person on high dictating what the meta is.
Right. So if you take, again, League of Legends, let's say the pro scene, all of a sudden, just for example, Malphite and Hecarim become established pro champions. They're being picked or banned every week.
Right.
Without a doubt, you will go into your games online and you will suddenly start seeing an influx of Malphite and Hecarim play. But the point is, no one at your tier, most likely, is good enough to actually utilize those champions properly, which is why even in, it doesn't matter what the meta is, you will still see people stomping on like Amumu or Master Yi at lower tiers, because those champions are good at punishing players who don't know how to play the game.
Right, and depending on your personal player rank, whether you're in bronze, gold, silver, diamond, whatever it is, that is going to dictate the degree on which you're going to be impacted by the meta. If you're playing at bronze or silver tier,
the chances
of you running into a player good enough to execute what the meta is
pretty rare.
It's pretty low. And that's the thing, is that you see a lot of people online constantly complaining about meta in whatever game that it may be, or tier lists for the fighting game community. And you see this sort of vitriol whenever it comes to maybe a certain group of characters or a certain pairing of characters is really strong. But the problem is, most of these people making the noise are either one, parroting things that they hear pros say, which you're never in the context that pros are in.
Right.
So the game is played at a completely different way. Then you have people just complaining because they see other people complaining. And again, you're probably never seeing those hero compositions or those characters at that level.
And I think that's kind of the main gripe, is that the majority of people out there that are being like talking heads about this sort of thing, it doesn't even affect their play.
Yeah.
Most of the people who are affected by this are pro or playing at the near pro level.
Yeah.
And honestly, those collection of players impact the meta the most, right? So there is a bit of a synergy between those two things. But the people who are sitting in bronze and even gold and whining about metas really crack me up.
If you aren't playing in diamond or master tier for League of Legends, you are unaffected by the meta.
Well, hold on. I wouldn't say that you're unaffected by it. You're certainly not playing against the actual meta itself, but you're against symptoms of the meta. For
That's
example,
true. Yeah,
in
yeah,
Overwatch,
yeah.
Because GOATS is so popular, even though people within bronze, silver, and gold aren't playing it effectively, they're still playing those large HP pool characters, which can be frustrating. But as Lloyd in our chat over at twitch.tv/checkpointxp points out, at those lower levels, because those people aren't mechanically sound, if you play to counter, you're more likely to succeed against those type of comps.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening out in Colorado on ESPN Denver 1600, 104.3 The Fan, as well as Extra Sports 1300 in Colorado Springs. We're currently talking about the meta and whether or not it actually does have an impact on the majority of the player base, which, I mean, it sounds like it really doesn't.
Here's a perfect example. On New Year's, we all had a really big Smash Ultimate thing that we did on stream. And until, you know, everybody was pretty much even, Joe was pretty much beating us all up with Marth. Then I picked Little Mac, who is trashed here, who almost everybody considers as one of, if not the worst character in the game.
Yep.
And I was able to go like 10 matches straight.
I thought he was one below trashed here, and he's ass tier now.
Yeah, he's bad.
Okay.
He's bad because
really
he has
bad.
No options to get back onto the platform once he's knocked off. But again, because none of us are pro-level Smash players, that deficiency or that lack of tools that he has doesn't affect us.
However, if you come in with a greater degree of proficiency at the game and then start playing, oh, I don't know, Villager or something
or
like
Peach.
That. Yeah. Go away. You're ruining the game for everyone else, and you know it.
I don't think there's any game that better exemplifies this than PUBG does. PUBG is a game that appears to be randomness and luck to a first timer, right? If you can't differentiate between a vertical grip and a half grip or a thumb grip, if you can't hear a footstep and know exactly where that person is,
if you're never going to use the Coriolis effect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The meta does not apply to you. You are a loop pinata. Your job is to collect stuff for the people who can do those
things. As one of our favorite streamers calls them, you're a snake.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
You're going to be crawling on your belly that whole map.
Your best chance is to stay out of sight until there's one or two people left and play a cheese strategy.
Yeah.
That's all you can really do. It's the same thing with StarCraft. Why is Zerg rushing so popular? Because it's really easy to do, and low-level players are not good at defending against it, so it's a popular strategy for newcomers.
Right.
But it's not the meta strategy. It's why when you get to pro play, you almost never see a Zerg rush anymore because good players know how to stop it.
Exactly. They know how to counter it. And that's where you start getting into the dance of the meta. And that's where things actually do start to get interesting when you start to get two players who are kind of evenly matched, who it's like, oh, I know that trick, and you're able to counter it. Suddenly that matchup becomes instantly more interesting.
Yes.
And instantly more engaging.
That's like my favorite StarCraft player is named Haas, and all he does is cheese strategies. He has made his own personal meta out of cheese strategies, because if this cheese strategy fails, I can still do this one, and because I only do these strategies. I know how to handle all these different situations. He has taken, he understands the meta as this game is. I can't win at that.
Well, what kind of toll does this kind of take on developers, too? Because, you know, developers are hearing this torrent of feedback from, you know, fans of their game. And when you look at it, you're like, yeah, maybe 70% of this does not pass the smell test. You're like, this is, you're not even playing at this level. How can you be making these observations? This is just nonsense.
Because it goes back to who do you develop your game for and who do you patch for? Do you patch for the general populace or do you patch for your pro scene? And I think based on, you know, games like StarCraft, where you can see there was a clear development move towards their pro scene. They noticed that game was old, so they went that way. Overwatch, I think, is a game that has a much, much bigger problem to solve when it comes to their meta, because they still have somewhat of a healthy community in terms of people playing the game, but they also have one of the most visible pro scenes out there right now.
But who do you listen to? In terms of the feedback that you're getting, do you take it more into account from the pro players or from your average player base?
Well, I think either way, it's a fine line, because also don't want to be changing the game to where you as the developer are the one that's making those big sweeping changes, because if you do, then the community suddenly is going to be like, all right, this is too stale, you have to change it now.
Exactly. That's where you start getting into terms like nerfs and, you know, broken and all of these different things, and those start to become loaded terms as well. Listen, we want to hear from you. Do you think changes in meta affect everyone, or is it just the highest tiers of play? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll sit down with Michael Sherman. He's the head of collegiate esports at Riot Games. But ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint News Desk.
Fortnite might have gotten an A in profitability, but what did they get an F in?
Gaming news is next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on CBS Sports Radio 1300 in Baltimore, as well as the Ticket 1230 in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. Make sure you visit our website over at CheckpointXP.com to subscribe to our growing offering of podcasts. Follow us on Twitch over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP to join our live shows and connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP, we'll check out one of our interviews featured on our first national show of 2019, Checkpoint XP's educational special. Our conversation with Michael Sherman of Riot Games will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Joe over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get a gaming news update.
Gaming News Update with Joe Sloan.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
While Fortnite was far and away the most profitable game of 2018, they're definitely not firing on all cylinders over at Epic. The Better Business Bureau slapped the company with an F in customer service, the lowest rating possible. The reason cited was 247 unanswered customer complaints on the company's website.
And I'm pretty sure majority of those have to do with my kid went on Fortnite and racked up $10,000 worth of charges.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I can definitely see
Does
that.
Does Epic care?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think that Epic just doesn't have customer service, right?
I'm sure they do.
I'm thinking that, like, if 247 is, like, a kind of low number for how many kids are playing Fortnite.
Yeah, when you take it as a percentage.
Think of how big the problem must be. Think of how often that is happening if there are 247 unanswered complaints on the website.
Or are they really paying that much attention to, like, the Better Business Bureau? Your Epic Games, you just made $3 billion on Fortnite.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't matter at that point.
While trying to get aerial footage of Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, a news chopper caught a glimpse of Mario Kart 8 being played on the Jumbotron at the neighboring Kauffman Stadium. The massive screen was playing host to a Kansas City Royals employee tournament for Royals Charities, the MLB team's foundation.
This is awesome. First of all,
I want to play Mario Kart on a Jumbotron.
That's the most epic way to play Mario Kart.
It's so cool.
Like, you see the actual picture of it, and you're like, yeah, playing on a Jumbotron must be cool, but then you're like, you see it in the stadium, and it's like a good 30% of the whole stadium, and you're like, wow. I can't even imagine controlling something that huge with a controller.
I don't know how I feel about getting hit with a blue shell on a 10,000 foot screen. That doesn't feel good, I don't think.
No, probably not.
No. Can you imagine sucking at Mario Kart on a screen that
big? I can imagine that. Yes. I can. Absolutely. Yeah. We reported on this show that 12 pros were banned for using a radar hack in PUBG. Well, that same investigation has now banned over 30,000 accounts worldwide in the game. Moving forward, PUBG says they will be doing background checks on all accounts for players entering official competitions.
Yeah, this is a cheat that apparently has been going unchecked for quite some time because it was so difficult to detect, because it actually checked stuff server-side, not game-side, mm-hmm. and basically allowed people to just look at a separate map and see where everyone was located.
Yeah. That is
That's a problem.
That is definitely a problem. It also doesn't make me feel any better about my own PUBG skills, right? Because I mean, I don't play PUBG that often, but I can almost guarantee I've never run into any of those.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. I've
30,000 people. You've been in a game with one of these people?
No,
before.
Probably not. No, I think all of my deaths were probably well deserved.
Okay.
Well, I mean, they may have been. But you could have been cheated on and still deserve to die.
Yeah.
That sounds like a weird thing to say out loud.
Yeah.
In a shock move, an LCK League of Legends team gave their players an almost unprecedented reward. Following a strong closing of the 2018 season and a dominant win at the Kespa Cup, the LCK team Griffin has extended their entire team by 3 years in a space dominated by 1 or 2 year contracts. A 3 year guarantee is nearly unheard of.
That's huge.
If your name isn't Uzi or Faker, or maybe like 5 other players, you don't get a 3 year contract.
But could Let alone a whole team.
But I mean, could this be evidence of longer term contracts coming?
Please, let it be.
I mean, this is a team that's doing well, but obviously they want to develop them even further and you know, make a long term commitment. And you know, the turnover rate in a lot of esports teams is very high, and you know, you've got to wonder at what point is there going to be a team that really invests in consistency to try to do team building instead of just trying to grab the hottest, fastest talent.
Well, you've also just locked in your entire team at whatever price they agreed on for the next 3 years.
That's
true.
If you
see contracts start growing up, these guys are out of luck.
You know what? That's a really good point.
You know what I think it's really going to take for teams to really start investing in long-term contracts? It's going to be the first time that someone like, I don't know, Clutch Gaming discovers a talent, like a big time talent, and you know, maybe the rest of the team isn't good enough to like take him to the championship, but he's really good.
Yeah.
And then he leaves to go to Cloud9 the following year because he wants a chance to win. That sort of thing. Cloud9 poaching a big time talent. That's what it'll take for people. Like, we should have locked up a 7 year deal.
You know what? That's actually a really good point.
Dell's gaming brand Alienware has now been made the official PC and display partner of Riot Games. Alienware will be represented in the NALCS and LEC, as well as at the Midseason Invitational, Worlds, and in the NA vs. EU Rift Rivals Tournament. The partnership will begin officially with the kickoff of LEC play on January 18th and LCS play on January 26th.
Well, congratulations to all those Riot players getting all those really nice monitors.
Sweet Alienware equipment.
I'm jealous. They say top of the line equipment. That really is that's very true.
I'd like that.
Yeah, seriously.
Activision Blizzard is continuing their corporate restructuring as 3 more appointments have been made. Former Call of Duty executive Rob Kostich has been named Activision president. Former CFO Houman Saknini has been named president of King Digital, and CFO Dennis Durkin has been named president of Activision Blizzard's emerging businesses.
So I don't know if this lends any more credence to the discussion that we had on the national show earlier this week.
Yeah, they did all fill Activision roles. It's not like any of them got put in charge of Blizzard.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, but it does seem like there is a high degree of restructuring that's going on within that company.
I see a lot of promotion from within.
That's about
Activision.
To say, everything seems to be from within. So even though it is some cause for alarm, I still think that this is the proper way to do it. And for them to say that we're promoting from within, yeah, they want to keep that culture intact.
And I mean, not to, and I just looked, this isn't a story that we're doing a little bit later on, but Bungie just broke off from Activision too. So there's a lot of different things going on inside of that company. It's going to be interesting to see what moves they end up making moving forward too.
Following the success of Ruby Grim Eclipse in 2016, Rooster Teeth has now announced their video game division's first original IP, Vicious Circle. The game is billed as a multiplayer FPS set in a gritty sci-fi comic book universe. No more details have been made available, but the game is scheduled to release in late 2019.
I have to say,
Borderlands?
I have to say, I'm so impressed because this is a company that has come from Machinima roots, making...
From a three-minute Red versus Blue Rooster Teeth Halo video.
I mean, it's pretty incredible the way that that this company has evolved over time, and I love seeing it. So good for them. Let's see more games, Rooster Teeth.
Rockstar Games has released details on an upcoming 32-player Battle Royale mode for Red Dead Redemption 2 Online. Anyone familiar with PUBG or Fortnite will immediately understand the concept, as 32 cowboys are dropped on an island and tasked with gathering weapons and ammo to be the sole survivor.
Yes.
Both a free-for-all and team mode will be available.
Listen, I can't wait to go to the crib and play this. I'm so serious. I can't wait to play this, because listen.
How is it that we stomp every attempt at a Battle Royale game after Fortnite? Is just, now they're just jumping on the bandwagon until Rootin' Tootin' Cowboy Shootin'
right.
dips their Western boots into that
right.
into that pond, and we're like, yes,
I'm ready for it, because it's not, again, it's not the whole game. It's a tack-on mode onto something that already exists. If I don't want to play this stupid Battle Royale mode, I could just go and play the regular game.
Does GTA Online have that already?
No.
I can't believe that. That's shocking.
That's actually really surprising.
That's all for the Checkpoint XP Gaming News Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Joe, for the update. Out in Las Vegas, CES has been going on this week, and we've been hearing all about... Wait, what? We've been hearing all...
All you out there in listener land asking us why we're not talking
about it. Oh, my God. No. We are pulling this show over.
Full stop.
Joe,
yes.
Did you actually write the... damn words, all you listening out there in listener land.
I did.
You really write that?
I did write that.
You
I'm
have
sorry.
Lost all script writing privileges on this show moving forward.
Is that all it
I'm
took
ashamed.
To get rid of those? Is that all it took?
Oh my God. I'm
That's bad.
Oh, I've got the douche chills. That's terrible.
He's not Dick Clark, Joe.
I wanted to hear him say it though so badly.
CES has been going on.
Do you think he's Casey Kasem? Like, oh, everybody out there in listener land.
Norris, would you not have given anything to hear that?
Ugh.
No, I don't want
to
hear it.
Oh, God, I would love to hear that. So, yeah, CES is going on this week, and literally everyone wants to know why we're not talking about it. We've heard it in the chat this week, and here's the reason why. Because the weirdest things you can imagine get announced out at CES. We have it, guys. It's happened. The voice command toilet is here.
Thank God.
I mean, have you not been waiting for that?
I have.
I thought that this was a normal thing in Japan already.
Is it?
No.
No, but the toilet bidet combo.
That talks to you. That's a Japanese product.
Oh.
I've heard of this.
Oh,
I heard
like
about
that.
It 10 years ago.
I think it was Mercedes came out with a massage chair that the person who reviewed it said it's like having uncomfortably bad sex with Optimus Prime.
As opposed to what? Like
that
really
might
fulfilling
be,
sex
on.
With Optimus Prime?
That might be one of the best descriptors I've ever heard for a chair in my entire life.
We also had an autonomous robot that was killed by a self-driving Tesla.
We did see that.
So the first robot on robot homicide.
RIP robot. So hold on. Did the car not a person, and that's why it didn't swerve? Could it tell the difference?
Did they build a robot Columbo to solve the murder? That's the most important question.
Hey, we get Nick Valentine on the case.
it would have to clearly be the memories of Nick Valentine.
Right. Yes. Absolutely.
Installed into an Android.
This is where we're going to get Knight Rider eventually, right?
Listen, if he will be revealed on CES.
Oh, yeah.
Kit will be revealed.
Who showed off Kit this year? Oh, anyone?
Not that I know of. We also got a butler robot that can do really simple things like grab your slippers.
Oh, the folding, the clothes folding robot.
It wasn't a robot. It was a printer that folded clothes, okay? Nate, what about the gaming phone we saw?
Oh, yeah. There was actually a couple of things worth talking about. The gaming phone, liquid-cooled and air-cooled, 10 gigs of RAM on a phone.
How big is that?
Under $500.
They said a 6-inch screen on that bad boy.
It didn't look much bigger than
that.
How can it not liquid cooled and freaking?
I'm sure the radiator's really small.
There was also
shoulder buttons.
Ooh. The Alienware M17 got released. That rollable television.
Yes. There's a lot of rollable television, like televisions that roll up into like an entertainment center. We saw the foldable phone. It's now out of prototype and is an actual functional production model of the suitcases that follow you.
Oh no.
I saw a suitcase that if you pet it, it has little anime ears.
You know, Lloyd's pointing out that half of these things that we've mentioned, you can just get kids to do. Millennials aren't having kids, so we need robots.
Robots to do it.
Passing on having kids.
That's right.
And besides, if I have a robot to fold my clothes and not a real human being, I'd do that.
Going back, Joe, to your to the Alienware M17, yes. That looks like a really nice laptop.
Yeah.
A nice consumer grade laptop. But their Area 51M laptop.
Oh my god,
looks like a beast.
Yeah,
oh
my
god. Please give me.
Gorgeous. And they were talking about the I think it was either the it was definitely the GPU, but I think one other piece on there may have been the power supply is modular.
Mm-hmm. What?
The problem is that they don't have a next model for you to swap in yet.
For years to come, this thing should be upgradable.
A truly modular laptop.
Yep.
I never thought I'd see the day.
And I mean, Alienware is Dell, so they would be able to do that.
I agree. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, interesting stuff coming out of CES. What else? Was there anything? A lot of HTC Vive stuff.
You said the foldable phone.
The thing that could
do 10 loaves of bread in an hour.
We got the Elgato stuff.
The Elgato stuff was really cool.
They've got a new one that'll allow you, your iPhone or iPad to be taken as an input. That's pretty cool.
Can we get an Android version of that, please?
Because we all need that. Literally, we all have Android. Please.
I understand that Apple is actually pretty good about making their devices operate in a secondary design manner as well. But I'm sure that Android has that functionality too. Just, you know,
They've also
get
got
the engineers on.
They've also got a key light that where the intensity and the warmth can be changed on your desktop.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I don't know if it's cool for $200, but it's cool.
No, but I mean, like, yeah.
Better than this, I'll give them that.
No, the one that's over next to Norris was like, I don't know what, $50? And it's like, you press a button to change the warmth.
Bad. Oh, this wasn't even 50.
Yeah.
This is 20.
So that's what I think. $200 is a little steep.
Yeah, it seems a little steep, Elgato.
It's just because it's software control.
Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Did anything at CES catch your attention? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. That's right, everyone out there in Radio Land.
Come on, I got my wish.
Coming up next on Checkpoint XP, we'll sit down with Michael Sherman. He's the head of collegiate esports over at Riot Games. Stick around. That conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR 560 AM, 95.9 FM, and 103.9 in Lexington, Kentucky. Make sure you visit our website at checkpointxp.com to subscribe to our growing offering of podcasts. Follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/checkpointxp to join the show live, or connect with us on social media at Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up over the next three episodes of Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to check out interviews featured on our first national show of 2019, Checkpoint XP's educational special. So let's check out our conversation with Riot Games' Michael Sherman.
So I actually want to start with your background and how you got into playing League of Legends and got in with Riot. How did this all begin with you?
This is going way back. I started playing League of Legends in 2009. I was a senior in high school. I'd been playing a lot of similar games all this time with a group of friends, and I was saying, hey, there's this new game, it's in beta, it has matchmaking, which was like a huge deal at the time, we should play that instead. And I get us all beta keys, and we just start playing, and when I get to college, I meet a bunch of other people who I introduce to the game. We start playing as a team pretty regularly. Before long, we're playing as like the school team, and then we played in one tournament that I was really unhappy with how it was run, and so I sent like this long list of feedback about like the tournament, and they're like, cool, do you want to come work for us? And I was like, sure. So that was Ivy Law, and I eventually went from Ivy Law and continued building out tournaments, and Riot started contracting us to run their own college events. And eventually I was still in school, I was studying computer science, and I was working at Texas Instruments at the same time, and Riot was like, come to Riot. And I went for like a summer and then just never went back. Dropped out of school and like have been at Riot for 4.5 years now, all working on college.
That's awesome. I mean, I should mention you went to University of Texas at Dallas.
Yes.
And Texas is, of course, becoming just a hotbed of esports. As much as like places like Los Angeles and New York are starting to get in, Texas has really kind of adopted esports. What is it about the environment in Texas that makes like esports so appealing?
Sure. I think, it's always helpful to have a lot of land. I think it's really just the communities that were born out of Texas years ago. I mentioned I went to school in Texas. The guys who head up Blizzard's esports initiative also came from, a college esports initiative came from University of Texas. And at the time, we just were organizing events and traveling to each other's schools and kind of like building out a really rich community of just gamers in Texas. And I think that kind of like, I feel like it left a bit of a legacy that has evolved into official school support, a lot of investors in Texas looking at how to capitalize on games and help grow gaming infrastructure around the state. But I think ultimately so much of it started with what was happening at the grassroots level around the state.
And of course, esports has, I mean, more than anything, a huge history in that kind of grassroots development. It all started with the kids on campus trying to find a place to hold a LAN party. Is that just indicative of the kind of community that rallies around video games and esports?
I think it is. I don't think it'll always be that way. We want to do stuff, and we're not content with just being told no, so we're going to go figure out how to do it anyway. When you look around at like what's going on at Irvine as an example, this is kind of the beginning of the future of what games look like in a community, where it will be much more about that these opportunities will just exist for students without them, and gamers without them really having to lead the charge on their own. We've seen a lot of schools be really successful when they partner with their students, starting out asking, hey, as a college club, what can we be doing to support you better? And maybe that's you need a space on campus. Maybe that's we give you some computers to practice on in the library. So it's kind of like I believe that that is built into gamers, that was how it was born. But I think we're starting to see an evolution and a future in the way that games are represented on campuses and for communities.
So a lot of our listeners out there may not be very familiar with collegiate League of Legends. You know, they're sitting out there thinking like, well, wait a minute, we got a quality product in NALCS every week. That's a fun thing to watch. Why should I tune in and watch collegiate league?
So, you know, honestly, our goal isn't to just turn you into a viewer. Our goal as a team is actually to change the way that games is presented on college campuses. So when I started on the team, it was first just how can we support clubs that exist out there? But it evolved into schools like UCI, where we could ask, what is the future of games look like on this campus? And what things do we need to do to create that environment? Content is not necessarily one of them. We don't need to have like a big weekly event and stream with hundreds of thousands of people tuning in to reshape the way that universities think about games as a part of their culture. Because it's not just football and basketball that are huge at colleges. It is all sorts of sports and support for sports of all types. So that's a really long way of saying, I think you should tune in and become a part of your community because it's happening at your school. I'm not asking for anyone to like care about another school that they don't go to. It should just be... If you want to feel a part of your community and celebrate in the camaraderie of your university, go find your community, go find your school's Twitch channel, go find your team, go try out for your team, really become a part of that community.
It's the tribalism, really, that gets evoked in rooting for your region. It's one of the things that we've actually talked about a few times on the show with the North American LCS and the idea that as the franchising came about, there wasn't quite that same push that we saw in Overwatch to have everything tied to just one specific city. But in your collegiate scene, you can still kind of evoke that sense of belonging and community. When you look around, like say at UC Irvine here, one thing you see is not only people who are there to compete, you also see the people who are there to play casually. I've been watching in the past few days here, half of these computers are League of Legends every day. Can you speak to the importance of the casual community as well?
I personally hate the word casual because it's not representative of what's actually happening. I think it's just different levels of play. I think that anyone that comes in here and wants to play games is like obviously takes it pretty serious. And I think that is just representative of why a university has this opportunity. It's not so much about like bringing out the casual gamers as it is to just celebrate the community. And I think a lot of this infrastructure does that.
It's been a interesting year, to say the least, for the League of Legends meta. From the spring, that was kind of utterly chaotic. A lot of pro players were very angry about the way the development was. But I think that's one of the very interesting things about watching collegiate esports, especially in League of Legends, is a lot of the time they're willing to go more off meta than you see in the pro scene. Is that something that is unique to League of Legends, or is that something you see in most esports at the college level?
Well, I mean, I think you see that in sports at the college level. I think that's what March Madness is famous for, is just the it's not professional play, and therefore you don't celebrate it for being the peak and pinnacle of basketball. You celebrate it for being this fun, goofy, different rule set event. So at the college, for college League of Legends, we think about it like, of course it would naturally turn into this world where I'm going against the best school. Of course I'm going to bust out my pocket pick from solo queue that I have 3,000 games on over the years because I'm just not comfortable in the other thing. So I shouldn't put myself in that position. And we think that's going to be unique to college. And I think it's something that we want to celebrate more and bring out more through it. But we've seen it really come through in the college championship on its own.
There's a great deal of young student athletes out there who are trying to decide whether they have the ability to go pro or whether they should go to college. What advice do you offer to them?
If you want to go pro, it'll be very apparent that that's an opportunity. I hate to word it that way. There are so few spots out there. And what we're hearing from professional teams is that it's not about how good you are mechanically. So much of what they're lacking is the soft skills that can't be learned just playing solo queue or playing online. So if you're 17 or 18, I also personally have a hard time believing that you have those capabilities. It's not to say it's not impossible, but I would say college is kind of like a natural evolution into that now. There's so many schools of varying tiers of education as well as tiers of play that it gives you a pretty wide spectrum of, if you're looking for what your next step is as a 17, 8-year-old League of Legends player, college is definitely like a huge opportunity to look at. We get asked the questions all the time around like path to pro and like, is this like the goal? And, you know, it'll get there as college continues to grow purely through the mass elevation that'll happen. You'll go from right now, there's millions of players on the ladder, and then there's the LCS and an academy. And eventually we'll get to, there's millions of people in the ladder. There's thousands of people in playing for their university. And then there's the LCS and Academy. And so it's gonna create a natural elevation platform that will help rise up players.
So for a long time, there's actually been this thought of an esports athlete's prime is about 17 to 23. You're suggesting maybe that as things like these soft skills that can be learned on a college campus become more desirable on a team, maybe a student's or a player's prime might actually grow to a little bit older so that they have those kind of soft skills that you spoke of.
Yeah, you know, I think it's different for every game, but it's something that we've seen in League of Legends. Even if you just look at who entered the LCS this year as a rookie, there's not just a pool of 16-year-olds waiting to turn 17 to just enter the LCS. Teams aren't looking for that. So I do think that college, like, mechanical skill is super important. You can look at Faker, and like, mechanical skill was not the only thing that was able to carry them to victory. They clearly had communication issues and team issues this year that couldn't be overcome. So I do think that college is going to help raise the lifespan of a pro player because it's going to train them healthier habits and kind of be a stepping stone into the lifestyle of a pro player. It's not going to start out with, okay, you've lived at home your whole life, now go live in a team house, or in some cases, go find an apartment and like live on your own and come to the office every day and practice, as teams like Team Liquid have started to evolve into. So I think that college is going to start serving as a point to help start teaching healthy habits, help create better pro players, and will ultimately become like a really sustainable path for growing talent in North America.
Michael Sherman, head of collegiate esports for League of Legends at Riot Games. Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again to Michael for his time. That's going to do it here for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website at checkpointxp.com for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a full archive of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Thanks to our executive producing team of Buzz Knight, Mike Thomas, and Rick Scott. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Producing and booking help from Christine Solis, and of course my co-hosts who pulled double duties as producers for Checkpoint, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.